Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Halloween is over, but we still have some scary stories in the news. Today, we have some national stories from Public News Service, including preparations being made in anticipation of possible post-election violence and threats by the Trump campaign to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act if he wins the presidential election. Then, we'll have a special report on a growing chorus of warnings about Donald Trump's fascist rhetoric and threats of retribution and even violence against his political enemies and the media, including warnings from two top generals, both Republicans, who served in the Trump administration and now say that Trump is a fascist who is too dangerous to serve as president ever again. Our newsmaker interview today is with Stephen Houlihan, a Democrat running against Congressman Daryl Issa and taking a stand for democracy. He's also a nurse pledging to protect health care for all Americans and fight to restore our rights and freedoms, including women's health care. Plus, hear why a coalition of Democratic and Republican officials are coming together to endorse Andrew Hayes over Carl DeMaio in an assembly race. We have some good news for East County, a new animal shelter that has broken ground in Santee that will also serve as an evacuation center for pets during wildfires or other emergencies. Plus, we'll have information for you on how to find voting centers and other key information for voting early or even registering to vote on Election Day, Tuesday, November 5th. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We know that he is actually manipulating the press and attempting to manipulate the consensus of the American people based on fiction instead of fact. We're prepared to respond.
Vice President Kamala Harris tells ABC her campaign is ready if former President Donald Trump prematurely claims victory on election night, just like he did in 2020. Trump has spent months sowing doubts of election integrity and refused to commit to accepting the results, even hinting at political violence if he doesn't win. Trump's most recent target is Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, where officials are investigating hundreds of fraudulent voter registration applications submitted by paid canvassers. The applications were rejected, but Trump described it as organized election fraud.
They've already started cheating in Lancaster. They've cheated. We caught them with 2,600 votes.
Pennsylvania election officials say the system is working, including safeguards against fake names included to make a quick buck. Secretary of State Al Schmidt says the nonpartisan election officials are doing their job effectively.
When you have cases like this, it should encourage people to have more faith in the system, not less.
A Pennsylvania judge has ordered an expansion of in-person early voting in a battleground county outside Philadelphia after long lines led to complaints of disenfranchisement. Responding to a lawsuit from the Trump campaign, the judge also extended the application window for mail-in ballot applications in Bucks County. During a campaign stop in Pennsylvania, House Speaker Mike Johnson said if Trump wins, there will be massive reforms to the Affordable Care Act. He told supporters Obamacare could be eliminated as part of an aggressive first 100 days in office.
We want to take a blowtorch to the regulatory state, okay? Yeah. I mean, these agencies have been weaponized against the people. It's crushing the free market.
Republicans repeatedly attempted to repeal the ACA during Trump's term, but never found a workable replacement. Campaigns are spending record amounts to win control of the Senate. Observers expect more than $1 billion will be spent by Election Day in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Montana. In Montana, incumbent Democratic Senator John Tester is hoping his support for reproductive rights could give him a needed edge. But University of Montana journalism professor Lee Banville says Tester could be vulnerable to what he calls the political refugee vote, conservatives who moved from blue areas to Montana, which had traditionally been independent.
If Tester loses, it's sort of a statement that actually party identification means more than anything else in the state of Montana, and that is a change from where we used to be.
Recent polls show Tester's opponent, Republican businessman and former Navy SEAL Tim Sheehy, slightly ahead. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Alarm bells are being sounded by retired generals who served under former President Donald Trump. They warn that his increasing threats of violence and retribution against political enemies and journalists are fascist. Trump told Fox News earlier this month that he would order the National Guard and, if necessary, the military to go after enemies within on American soil if he is reelected, ABC News reports. He has frequently used the enemies within description for his political opponents, such as Congressman Adam Schiff, who led the impeachment hearings against Trump. Trump has repeatedly threatened retribution against his political enemies, including charging retired generals who have criticized him with treason. In addition, he has threatened journalists and major news outlets, calls for arrest by the military of anyone he deems radical left lunatics, and says he aims to build camps to detain tens of millions of immigrants. He has also called for a single day of violence to curtail crime, says he would use force to quell protests against him if he wins the election, and says Jews will be to blame if he loses. Retired Army General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during Trump's first term as president, now says Trump is fascist to the core and the most dangerous person to this country, according to an interview Milley gave to Bob Woodward for Woodward's new book, War. Milley told Woodward that President Trump wanted to revenge or court-martial retired Admiral William McRaven, merely because McRaven criticized Trump. Admiral McRaven led the 2011 mission that resulted in the capture and killing of Osama bin Laden, mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks on New York and Washington, D.C. Milley diverted Trump from such action by promising to take care of the situation, then privately warned other former military commanders to avoid publicly criticizing Trump for fear of retaliation, the Washington Post reports. Woodward, the Washington Post reporter who exposed the Watergate scandal, has covered every president since Nixon over the past half century. In his book, he calls Trump unfit to lead the country, stating Trump was far worse than Richard Nixon, who resigned in disgrace. Woodward added, Trump was the most reckless and impulsive president in American history. Retired Marine General John Kelly, Trump's former chief of staff, told The Guardian newspaper in London that Trump insisted that generals should be, quote, like the German generals under Adolf Hitler, who were totally loyal, even as Hitler orchestrated the mass murder of Jews and others in concentration camps during the Holocaust, as well as the invasion of sovereign nations across Europe and beyond. Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic nominee for president, during her own rally, played a clip from Trump's rally in Aurora, Colorado, where he repeated the enemy from within rhetoric and threats to use the military against U.S. citizens on American soil. Harris says Trump is unhinged and a fascist seeking unchecked power. Trump has said he would be a dictator on day one. Tim Walz, Harris's vice presidential running mate and a former National Guardsman, Walz denounced Trump's threat to turn the National Guard on Americans. Walz said, using the military or National Guard against Trump's domestic enemies could amount to treason. Top supporters of Trump, whom he has pledged will serve on his team if elected, including people with criminal records, have signaled support for Trump even in the most extreme actions, including political executions and unleashing the gates of hell, among other disturbing remarks. Michael Flynn, National Security Director during Trump's first administration and a former Army lieutenant, pleaded guilty of lying to the FBI, but was pardoned by Trump. Trump says Flynn would serve in his administration again if Trump wins the election. Flynn spoke at a far-right Christian nationalists' Rod of Iron Freedom Festival in Pennsylvania recently. Video reveals that when at the event, he would sit at the head of a military tribunal to not only drain the swamp, but imprison the swamp, and even execute the swamp. Flynn replied that he supports accountability, adding darkly, We got to win first, and then Katie bar the door. Believe me, the gates of hell, my hell, will be unleashed, MSNBC reports. Steve Bannon, conservative media host and former White House strategist for Trump, in prison for contempt of Congress and defying a subpoena. Natalie Winters, co-host of Bannon's War Room podcast, recently said this during her broadcast. If you want a definition of what justice or retribution looks like, it's going to look like Stephen K. Bannon sitting in his chair providing live commentary during the trials and eventual prison sentences, including Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Special Prosecutor Jack Smith, whom she suggested should be tried for treason. Beyond attacking political opponents and immigrants as vermin and worse, Trump has recently turned his vitriol on Jews. He has told his rallygoers that the Jewish people would have a lot to do with a 2024 loss, a chilling and unsubstantiated remark coupled with his direct use of Hitler's rhetoric and tactics. Ivanka Trump, one of Trump's ex-wives, stated during their divorce proceedings that Trump kept a book of Hitler's speeches at his bedside and read from it every night. Trump has also repeatedly praised dictators such as Russian President Vladimir Putin. In addition, Trump has taken a page out of fascist dictators' playbooks in attacking the media. He has called the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, to yank the broadcast licenses of ABC and CBS simply because he disliked questions ABC's moderator asked during the debate and because CBS interviewed Harris on its 60 Minutes show. Trump was invited to be interviewed on the program but declined. FCC Chair Jessica Rosenworcel sharply criticized Trump's threats in a statement to The Hill. She warned, "While repeated attacks against broadcast stations by the former president may now be familiar, these threats against free speech are serious and should not be ignored," adding, "The First Amendment is a cornerstone of our democracy. FCC does not and will not revoke licenses for broadcast stations simply because a political candidate disagrees with or dislikes content or coverage. But that could change if Trump is elected and stacks agencies with political appointees loyal to him, as Project 2025 provides a blueprint for him to do in a second term. Perhaps it has taken threats against the media and calls to imprison or execute those he perceives as enemies from within to get the mainstream media's attention. But major media outlets have finally taken notice of Trump's increasingly fascist statements. CNN ran an image of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary definition of fascism in an article headlined, "Trump Ramps Up Anti-Immigrant Authoritarian Rhetoric." That dictionary definition notes that a fascist exalts nation and often race above the individual, that it is associated with a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, including forcible suppression of opposition. Trump has surrounded himself with people with neo-Nazi and white supremacist sympathies. His former White House advisor, Stephen Miller, a proponent of the Great Replacement Theory, described by the Anti-Defamation League as a philosophy of fear that whites will become a powerless minority in the face of changing demographics, was found to have recommended white nationalist websites and literature in private emails uncovered by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Steve Bannon, Trump's former White House chief strategist and campaign head, told a French far-right crowd in 2018 that they should wear the racist label proudly. During his time in the White House, he also pushed an agenda of economic nationalism, Voice of America reported. Trump's America First slogan has been touted historically by racist and anti-Semitic movements, from the Ku Klux Klan to Nazi supporters, according to a report by Foreign Policy in Focus. As president, Trump praised prominent white extremist figures. In 2017, after a driver ran over counter-protesters at the Unite the Right rally and killed Heather Heyer, Trump said that there were some very fine people on both sides. He has praised violent extremist groups, such as the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, promising to pardon them for violent assaults on the Capitol if elected to a second term, including assaults that led to deaths and serious injuries of police officers. Historians are also taking note. Robert Paxton, one of the top scholars on fascism and a professor emeritus at Columbia University, has said that Trump's open incitement of civic violence that encouraged his supporters to violently storm the Capitol on January 6, 2020, crossed the line into fascism, Newsweek reports. That, coupled with Trump's threats against his political enemies, efforts to stoke a division against minority groups, and emulation of dictators such as Mussolini and Hitler, has led the fascism scholar to now conclude the label now seems not just acceptable, but necessary. Reporting on KNSJ, your network for social justice, this is John Tidwell.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. And today, my very special guest is Stephen Houlihan. He is a Democrat running against Congressman Daryl Issa, the Republican, in the 48th Congressional District, which includes most of East County. He's a former Santee vice mayor and councilman, a registered nurse, and a Save Mission Trails leader who led successful efforts to stop a power plant and a liquefied natural gas pipeline next to the regional park. So, Stephen, welcome to the show.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Great to have you back. Please tell us about your background for those folks that may not be familiar with you, even though you ran once before. Your top experience that qualifies you for this job, and your primary goals if elected to Congress.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. So yes, I am Stephen Houlihan. I am running for Congress for California's 48th Congressional District. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for over 25 years, and my background is in critical care. I have a lot of experience in Medicare because now I work as an analyst. And so I feel like I have a lot to offer for working with Medicare specifically. I am a former Santee City Council member. I served from 2016 to 2020, and I was actually the vice mayor of Santee in 2019. And those were some interesting times, to say the least. I am the president of Save Mission Trails, and we are the group that stopped the Quail Brush power plant from being built at Mission Trails Regional Park. And we also stopped a liquefied natural gas pipeline from going through the 48th Congressional District. We created a scenic highway out of the 52 as well. We worked very hard on that and have a number of amazing accomplishments. As a city councilman, I was able to work with the firefighters and make sure that the firefighter paramedics in Santee were well-funded. We made sure that all of the underground drainage worked, and that was another big thing that we did when I was on the council that, unfortunately, in San Diego, they didn't seem to move quickly enough, and then when those big storms hit, there was a catastrophe. So many, many great accomplishments as a councilman, as a nurse. I'm a father, a happy husband. I've been a coach. I've coached soccer. I've coached baseball for many, many years. Some of the big things I want to do when I get into Congress, well, the first thing is we need to bring back women's rights. We need to codify Roe v. Wade. I want to expand Medicare for those 55 and up and for children. I have a plan that's called Medicaid. And I want to make sure that Social Security is there for everyone in their time of need as they age.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for that. Stephen, you mentioned on your website that this election is about freedom. There's some new issues in play, you know, since the last time you ran. One of those, of course, is the abortion rights issue. Congressman Issa has called the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe versus Wade a great day. He has consistently voted against reproductive freedoms for women. He has a 0% rating from Planned Parenthood and a 100% rating from pro-life anti-abortion groups. He's also opposed requiring insurers to cover birth control for women. So I wanted to ask you if you could elaborate a little bit more on women's reproductive health and how your views differ from your opponents.
My views could not differ from my opponents any more. He is actually the co-author for a nationwide ban on abortion everywhere. So don't be fooled.
Are there any exceptions in that? I wasn't aware of
no
that.
No exceptions.
So not even to save the life of a mother, say a woman suffering a miscarriage who needs an abortion to save her life.
They're taking a very hard line and it's wrong. It's wrong. I believe a woman should have choice. As someone who's been a nurse for 25 years, I understand the complexities of both pregnancy and childbirth. In fact, all nurses actually do a rotation and assist with that process. So I know how amazing it is to have a child. I have a 15-year-old, but also how difficult it can be for those that lose a child. And so I absolutely am for women's rights. Women's rights are human rights. And it means so much for everybody, especially for women, to have the autonomy to make decisions with what happens with their own body.
Yeah. As a nurse, Stephen, what is your assessment of our nation's healthcare system and how it can be improved? You mentioned an item or two there in your opening, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about how your views on healthcare compare with your opponents on things like saving the Affordable Care Act, which we should remind folks, when Trump was president the first time, he tried very hard to kill Obamacare, known as the Affordable Care Act. It was actually a single vote cast by Republican John McCain that saved it from being repealed. And even today, he says he has concepts of a plan to replace it. 9 years later, he still hasn't told us what, if anything, that plan includes. So where do you stand on all of this? And how does that contrast with Congressman Issa?
Well, I'll tell you what, the verdict is in, and Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was a complete success. It was and is and continues to be. Having medical insurance is so very important, especially when you hit your 50s. We need to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to be covered. And Congressman Issa, he voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. He has never, ever been a supporter of the importance of healthcare for all. We can't go back to the 1800s and social Darwinism, where only the strongest survive. It's really important that everyone have the opportunity. I am a big supporter of Medicare. Like I said, I want to expand it immediately for those 55 and older. I'm not saying that you have to go on Medicare. I'm just saying that, say you hit 55 and you're ready for retirement, you could have that option.
Yeah, it would be nice. I know when I was in my 50s, and wow, those premiums went through the roof, and it was suddenly very unaffordable, and you still had years to go before you could qualify for Medicare. And of course, you know, there's the chance of taking us back to that dark time when pre-existing conditions, when insurers could refuse you if you had a pre-existing condition, like, oh, say, childhood asthma.
Everyone has a pre-existing condition. Don't fool yourselves, people. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
And as you're older, you unfortunately, things start to happen. So expanding Medicare is so important.
Yeah.
But I also want to do is I want to lift up the children. When someone has childhood cancer, it's no cause of their own. Why do they have to go on and go on TV and ask for money to support all these different organizations? Let's just support them. And also think about this, all of that care that's done for children, all that preventative care, will lead to healthier outcomes, and it pays for itself over time.
Yeah, there you go. Congressman Issa voted against certifying votes in the 2020 election, certifying electors in the 2020 election, and against creating an independent commission to investigate the January 6th Capitol insurrection that injured so many police officers and killed some of them. Protecting our democracy is once again a major election issue this year, with Trump, whom Issa has supported, threatening to arrest his political opponents. He's been praising Hitler's generals for their loyalty to a ruthless dictator, and even saying he does not support our Constitution. I would like to hear your views on what steps you think should be taken to protect both the integrity of our elections and to preserve our democracy, which seems to be very much at risk right now.
Well, say the first step is for people to vote for me and get Congressman Issa out of Congress. He has failed to uphold his constitutional duty. He has failed. And a peaceful transition of power is one of the hallmarks of our democracy. Sometimes move a little bit to the left, sometimes move a little bit to the right, but we should always progress. And unfortunately, during the January 6th uprising, that was not happening. And then what's happened is individuals like Congressman Issa have not wanted to investigate. So again, it shows bad will.
Yeah, we should
get in there and stop these individuals from doing this.
Yeah, we should note that 62 judges, at least 62 judges, found that President Trump had lost the election, that there was no evidence at all of any credible fraud. And that included several judges that he himself had appointed. You know, these were not biased lefty liberal judges, at least, you know, many of them were not. So it's very troubling that we had members of Congress right now who are prepared to not certify an election if the person they support lost.
And I'm actually endorsed by the National Security Leaders for America, which is a bipartisan group of all retired generals, retired admirals, and retired cabinet members. And there's many hundreds of them. And they asked me out to endorse me because of Darrell Issa's terrible record on this.
So that's very compelling. Many voters cite the economy and inflation among their top concerns. What are your views on the state of our economy, how to improve the economic outlook for Americans, and bring down inflation, which is starting to come down, but obviously most everyone would like to see it come down even more?
Absolutely. The thing about inflation is it was a worldwide phenomenon.
True.
And so what happened was it wasn't just the United States that endured inflation. And our economy is actually the envy of the world right now. So although inflation, I get it. I've paid higher bills as well in everything. But if you look at the stock market, it's at record highs.
It is.
So it has bounced back. And if you look at the Fed, they've actually started to cut interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
Look at numbers for unemployment. It's at all-time lows. And so we are actually doing quite well. Now, prices have been too high. They are. You know how prices can be brought back down? Through competition. And unfortunately, my opponent, Darrell Issa, he has not been one to nurture competition. He's actually been a monopoly maker. Mm. And so when you have less competition, which isn't capitalism, you have higher prices. And so I am a big supporter of the $50,000 incentive put forth by Vice President Kamala Harris for new businesses. And so new small businesses, that's what's going to decrease prices as we have more competition.
What about her plan to offer, I think it was $25,000 for some first-time home buyers to help them be able to afford their first house? Certainly a key issue here in San Diego that has among the highest housing prices in the whole nation.
Yeah, I remember when I bought my house in 2009, and at the time there was a $10,000 incentive put forth by President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
It helped so much. It helped so much. And now here I am 15 years later, a homeowner, doing very well and very, very happy. So now things are much more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I $25,000 is excellent for a first-time home buyer. You may actually have to come up with a significant larger down payment just because of the way that the market is. But yeah, we not only do we need that, we need to expand, and people haven't really talked about things like inclusionary housing. We need to demand inclusionary housing all across California, but especially here in San Diego. And as a city councilman, I championed inclusionary housing. Unfortunately, I was outvoted and we weren't able to establish that in Santee. And I'm not talking about that's not low income housing. That's housing for the people of Santee or of the local community.
We need to pause for a moment for station ID. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. And now we return to our interview with congressional candidate Stephen Houlihan.
You mentioned that you have a middle class background and you've contrasted that against your opponent, who Darrell Issa is one of the richest men in Congress. I think he's fifth or sixth on the list right now. He also recently got caught up in a bit of a scandal there with some stocks or treasury bonds that he divested himself of. I believe it was over $300,000, over $250,000. It was a lot of money. And he was late reporting that, which apparently I'm reading may violate the Stock Act. Do you think we need more teeth in that law? Apparently it's only a $200 fine.
Absolutely. Insider trading is likely the only reason someone like Darrell Issa would even want to be in Congress. He is already extremely wealthy. He's absolutely not serving the residents of California's 48th congressional district. And he's using his status in Congress to make himself much, much richer. And so this is not okay. This is not okay. And there should be more teeth. You make $250,000 in profit and are fined $200. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. So Darrell Issa has done so many things that are unscrupulous over the years. That's why he got booted out of his original congressional district. He doesn't even live in this district. So it's very sad.
And yeah, he tried to become an ambassador or something, and they couldn't even get a Republican-led Congress to ratify that appointment because apparently he failed an FBI background check, which is interesting. We still don't know what was in that report.
We know that there's a lot of accusations. I guess I don't want to go too far in the mud, but he's just not the right person to represent this district.
Yeah, it seems to be a district that has a history of picking people with legal controversies. We've seen Randy Duke Cunningham, who spent, 7 years in the slammer for what he did, bribery. And then Congressman Duncan Hunter Jr., who was actually convicted of, campaign finance violations, was all set to go to prison when COVID hit, and then President Trump pardoned him. So they're kind of on a roll there. Darrell Issa was the only member of the San Diego County Congressional Delegation to vote against the infrastructure bill, the Biden bipartisan infrastructure bill, which brought major funding to repair dams, roads, and bridges in all those other congressional districts, but not out here. Would you prioritize fighting for funding for infrastructure in East County to, maybe to prevent the kind of flooding that we saw in January, with so many people's homes were destroyed, as well as repairing or replacing the aging El Capitan earthen dam in Lakeside that has been rated so dangerous by the state that they can't even keep it filled to capacity? So that water is just being released to run off into the ocean.
Absolutely. As a city council member, I prioritized infrastructure, filling potholes, fixing drainage. That's what government's supposed to be doing. And you know what Darrell Issa has done for us? Nothing. He has done absolutely nothing. He votes against that any type of infrastructure, and he doesn't bring any money home. And it's very, very sad. But I guess, when he never even visits the district and doesn't live in the district, then I guess he just doesn't care.
Yeah, the Hunters at least brought home the bacon for the aerospace industry, a few other things.
In Lakeside, we need to get that fixed.
That's really dangerous.
Catastrophe.
And it's near an active earthquake fault. And they've had a major earthquake in the past, back in the 1800s, that was strong enough to level an Indian village on the very site where that dam sits now. Moving on, immigration is a hot button issue in this district, with Donald Trump calling for rounding up millions of immigrants into detention camps and, deporting them. San Diego has among the highest number of international border crossers, including out in rural East County areas like Acumba and Campo. How would you balance the concerns over immigration from a security standpoint versus concerns of others over the humane treatment of migrants and asylum seekers, including families who were separated at the border during Trump, something he says he'll go back to?
We should never separate families. That, first of all, that's just unacceptable. And we should have passed comprehensive reform for the border, for immigration. The border
bill, which Darrell Issa voted against, we should note, the bipartisan reform bill that Republican leaders had fought for years and that Biden finally said he would sign. And then Donald Trump called up the Republican leaders in Congress and told them not to vote for it because it would make him look bad. You know, he wanted to perpetuate problems at the border, including fentanyl coming across the border. There was money in that bill for scanners to detect fentanyl smuggling, and Issa voted no on that.
It's unbelievable. He makes the border like his number one issue, and then he votes against it. So he creates a crisis so he can run on it, just like Donald Trump did. And so Issa is not a man of his word. And I believe we need reform. We need more immigration judges. We need more border patrol agents. We need manpower. We need to make sure that they're funded appropriately. We need those machines, those scanners that can detect fentanyl. And, you know, as a nurse, as a critical care nurse, I never dreamed that fentanyl would become a recreational drug. Yeah. And it goes into it gets put into drugs that maybe someone's unknowing that they're even taking it. And next thing you know.
Yeah, people think they're saving money going to a pharmacy in Tijuana, not realizing that a lot of those drugs down there are pharmaceutical drugs are laced with fentanyl, as are other street drugs and counterfeit pain pills, you know, being sold up here, you know, on the streets.
Yeah, a virtual wall. We need drone technology out there in the Far East County. You can't build a wall over those many, many thousands and thousands of miles. You need drones flying over there. That way you can see. And that's what makes sense. You need to bring real technology. And then that way, then the Border Patrol agents can go out there and assess the situation. That's what's important.
And they're putting mattresses up on top. They're taking ladders and putting mattresses up on the brand new 30-foot high Trump wall and just going over them with ropes to slide down. I have a friend that owns a property down there, and he showed me that's exactly what's going on. So I'm not sure that it's dissuading very, very many undocumented immigrants from coming in for all the money that was spent on it.
So then we end up, you know, UCSD, the trauma center over there, Mercy Hospital here in San Diego, mm-hmm. They don't have enough beds to fill with all these trauma patients. And so then that hurts us because we end up having to pay. Up at the hospital, we have to take care of them.
Right. So it seems like we need a system where people can apply legally for asylum without having to cross deserts and mountains to do it. And then they could vet them, check their backgrounds, and either they're accepted or they're not. And in which case they would be deported if they're a threat of some sort or whatever. Or don't meet the asylum standards. But then when you see people crossing out in those dangerous areas, you know, those are probably the smugglers, the bad guys that you really need to be worried about.
Absolutely. Yep. We need to make sure people have their day in court, make sure the border's secure. But we need to give everyone, you know, there needs to be justice. And, you know, we can't just turn our head and be inhumane about the situation. We need to have critical workers. So I support citizenship for critical workers. We need to modernize the whole Farm Worker Act. You know, there's the Modernization of Farm Worker Act. We need people that do those types of jobs.
Yeah, Farm Bureau wants those workers.
I don't want to go out there and do that work. Someone needs to do it. And also, you know what that does? It brings down the cost. It brings down you have a good workforce, then the cost of groceries will go down.
Very true. I would like to ask you your thoughts on climate change, specifically how to address its impacts, including the increasingly severe wildfires and flooding and storms that have impacted our region. I mean, who thought we'd get a tropical storm and a hurricane warning up here, or, you know, the worst flooding in 100 years, as well as the major wildfires that we've seen all across California and the West. And also, those things have created an insurance nightmare for so many homeowners right here in East County and all over the West. What ideas do you have to make that better?
Well, I don't know about everyone who's listening, but if you haven't gotten your homeowner's insurance, when you do, you're in for a shock, because it's going to go up by probably 20% or more if you're lucky enough to still be insured by that particular insurer. And so there is an insurance crisis going on. Mm-hmm. In the East County, in the 48th Congressional District, it has mostly to do with wildfire. And so the number one thing that we can do is bring in money, bring in federal dollars to put the power lines underground. Mm. A lot of the big fires are during the Santa Ana winds, and the power lines drop off of the towers.
Right.
It's on fire. So that's huge. We also need to bring in relief for individuals and try to help them when they do lose their insurance. And so we need to find ways to work with the insurance industry as well to make sure that people are able to afford insurance. Because if you have a mortgage, you must have insurance.
Yeah. Well, as well as maybe help to afford the kind of upgrades that might enable some of these people to get their insurance back. I guess in some cases, they just think the area is too dangerous and they won't insure it no matter what. But other times, maybe they need to replace, you know, an old roof or a wooden deck, or, you know, put those, you know, clear 100 feet of defensible space around their home. And if it's somebody that's older and on a fixed income, they just may not be able to afford to do that. I don't know about you, but when we've had to have major trees cut down, it can be thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars just to trim big trees.
That's correct. So yeah, we need to have tax incentives. We need to give tax breaks so that especially people on a fixed income can afford these things. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. And then for the issue of flooding, you wouldn't have thought San Diego would have had the type of flooding they did, but you know what? It can happen. And what you can do and what you should do as a city is you need to actually pass cameras down underground and make sure all that infrastructure is working. And we fought long and hard in Santee over it. But you know what? You know, I was able to prevail and reach.
We need that in places like Spring Valley and Lemon Grove and some of those inner city San Diego neighborhoods, Rolando, where they had such terrible flooding. And a lot of it was due to blocked up storm drains.
So it's absolutely important, you know, so we need federal dollars. And unfortunately, our congressman here in the 48th is bringing in zero federal dollars to help us.
I would like to talk about foreign policy next. The balance of power in Congress hangs in the balance right now. I mean, you know, the Senate, I think the Democrats currently have a one vote majority is all. In the House, the Republicans have a slim several vote majority, and that could flip, you know, either way. Whichever party controls Congress after this election could be making key decisions on international policy, of course, you know, in consultation with the president. So I've got three foreign policy questions. First is, do you support the NATO alliance that was set up to provide mutual protection with our European allies for both the U.S. and much of Europe? Trump has said he does not support that.
The NATO alliance is the greatest alliance in the history of the world, and I absolutely support it. And I believe that the vast majority of Americans do support NATO. I'm an American born abroad. I was born in Scotland, and my dad was over in Scotland, you know, having been deployed from here, from San Diego. And, you know, that was all about NATO. And NATO is so very important. It is what keeps, you know, a tyrant like Vladimir Putin in check. And without NATO, it would be very, very bad for us. It is wonderful.
He knows if he were to say, I mean, one reason he picked on Ukraine to invade is because they're not part of NATO currently. But you notice he hasn't marched into Poland or some of those other countries that because he knows that the rest of Europe would be coming to Poland's defense were he to try that. That brings us to the next question, which is, what do you believe is the proper U.S. role with regard to Ukraine and the Russian invasion of its sovereign nation?
You know what? We don't want to yield to tyrants and allow them to invade a sovereign nation like Ukraine. We should do everything in our power to support Ukraine, and we should make sure to provide them the weapons that they need. We need to provide them everything so that way we don't end up with American boots on the ground in Europe. We don't want to go back to what happened during World War II, where Hitler cut a deal and took over Poland when he rolled into Austria and annexed it and took over Europe because of lack of action. Putin would do the exact same thing given the opportunity. We must support Ukraine in every means possible.
What is your view on the Israel-Gaza conflict, which is so tragic for people on both sides, and the escalating tensions and military actions across the Mideast, now including Lebanon and Iran?
It's an absolute humanitarian crisis on both sides. And October 7th, that was Israel's September 11th awakening. They were attacked brutally, thousands killed, and it was absolutely inexcusable. Hamas is absolutely a terrorist organization, and they have done a terrible, terrible thing. And Israel does have the right to defend itself. Unfortunately, now we're over a year past that terrible day, and there's still many hostages still being held, and thousands upon thousands of Palestinians in Gaza have now died. And so the cost is so very high. And then with the war escalating up into Lebanon against Hezbollah, mm-hmm. and strikes in Tehran, this is getting out of hand very rapidly. And I would want to make sure that Israel understands that United States went through all these sorts of things when, after September 11th, we invaded Afghanistan, we invaded Iraq, and then we were locked in a 20-year conflict. And it turned out that Osama bin Laden, when he finally was killed under the watch of President Obama, he was in Pakistan. And so it is a tough, tough place. And so years and years of fighting will cost lives. It will cost a massive amount of money. And look at what happened in Afghanistan. The Taliban is back.
Yeah.
And 20 years didn't work.
What is the answer? Do we need a ceasefire, a two-state solution, a replacement of Hamas, or for that matter, the Netanyahu government? What do you think it will take to bring some stability and ultimately peace to that region, or is it even possible at this point?
Well, it's a matter of engagement. It's going to take many, many years to get back just to where we were, which was still not a very stable situation. A two-state solution, absolutely every group of people need a home. And so it's unfortunate now Gaza has been laid to waste, but it's time for the killing to end. Because what will happen is generation upon generation of all those children who have gone through this terrible experience, they could very well become the next generation of terrorists.
Yeah, unless we have a major rebuilding plan for Gaza, like the Marshall Plan to rebuild Japan after the nuclear bombs were dropped.
Exactly. So that's where we find ourselves. Now, I by no means do I make an excuse for Hamas. By no means. Mm-hmm. And it was a terrible mistake for the people of Gaza to allow Hamas to become the ruling party. But when you look at the Netanyahu government, it is very right wing also. And so, you have a very, very militant group there as well. And so when you put in, you have these two very militant right wing groups, you're doomed for conflict. And that's what's happened there.
I would like to ask who your major endorsers are. I understand you just picked up some big labor endorsements and maybe others. And also, where can people get more information about your candidacy?
Well, my website is electhoulihan.com. Like I said, I have the endorsement of the national leaders, national security leaders for America. That's a huge endorsement. Mm-hmm. I have endorsements from the California Democratic Party. I have endorsements from all of the Democratic groups in this area. I have a wonderful endorsement for healthcare for all from all the major healthcare organizations, all the big unions, the AFL-CIO, on and on and on. So we have all amazing backing. We have a huge grassroots movement. We have volunteers out every day knocking on doors, And, you know, we are the underdog. You know, by all means, we understand. But you know what? We're bringing in the tides of change.
Okay. Well, Stephen, I'm going to let you have the last word today. Is there anything else that you would like our audience to know out there that I have not specifically asked you about today in your race against Daryl Issa for the 48th Congressional District seat?
Well, I just want to thank everybody for their support. It's been a wonderful experience. I love getting out and speaking to people. I love the 48th Congressional District. I love the land. I love the people. I'm an avid mountain biker, hiker, rock climber, and outdoorsman. I love getting out in the backcountry. I love my hometown of Santee and all the things we've been able to do here. It's a great community. We have great weather. We have all the things that make this into a wonderful paradise. The one thing that we lack is we don't have any decent leadership in Congress. And so we need somebody to go to Congress and to bring back that money for infrastructure, for things like the dams and the roads, everything that we need to make this thing even, to make this place an even more wonderful paradise. And I am that person. I will do that. I will not be corrupted by all the money and the lobbyists and all that. I feel I have a higher power where I just want to serve the people.
Very good. We have been speaking with Stephen Houlihan, who is the Democratic candidate running against Congressman Daryl Issa in the 48th Congressional District, which includes much of San Diego, as well as many communities right here in East County. Stephen, I want to thank you very much for taking the time off the campaign trail there to come and speak with us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. A bipartisan group of elected officials held a press conference last week to endorse Republican Andrew Hayes in his race against fellow Republican Carl DeMaio for the 75th Assembly seat. The group of liberal and conservative leaders came together to denounce DeMaio, a former city councilman and former congressional candidate, as lacking ethics and integrity, and to support Hayes, a Lakeside School Board member. The speaker said that it isn't a matter of politics, but personal and political integrity, citing DeMaio's history of decisions and dishonest campaign practices. Democratic Congressman Scott Peters said, "We are Democrats, we are Republicans, and we don't always agree, but we all care about San Diego, and we're here because we believe in the importance of truth and integrity in campaigns and in the people we elect to office." The speakers cited a pattern of unethical behavior while in power, including DeMaio's attempt to slash funding for veterans and to cut death benefits for the families of fallen police officers back in 2010, when DeMaio cast the only vote against a 2-year labor contract between the city and the police union, which included survivor benefits. That showed a, quote, "dangerous lack of regard for the men and women who put their lives on the line every day," unquote, said Sergeant Jared Wilson, president of the San Diego Police Officers Association. DeMaio was always looking out for what was best for him, said Lorena Gonzalez, president of the California Labor Federation, AFL-CIO. Gonzalez, a former assembly member, has encountered DeMaio for years in local politics. She added, "We have had a front-row seat to the type of damage that Carl DeMaio will bring and likes to bring to government." DeMaio, the head of Reform California and a former conservative talk radio host, has also spearheaded tax-slashing ballot initiatives and engaged in smear campaigns against his political opponents with often deceptive mailers. DeMaio has attacked his current opponent, Hayes, as a go-along, get-along Republican because that's the type they want up in Sacramento. But Hayes, president of the Lakeside Union School District Board of Trustees, has countered that he is tired of people who just complain loudly and don't deliver anything. "My job is to make government work for you, not to just scream loudly," Hayes said in a debate with DeMaio in January. Hayes has a history of problem solving for East County communities and has familiarity with rural areas of the district as a former staffer to State Senator Brian Jones and Supervisor Joel Anderson. He's won a long list of endorsements ranging from chambers of commerce to labor groups, while many in East County consider DeMaio to be a carpetbagger. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
County officials all stepped aside for Howard the Dog to take the first dig during a groundbreaking for the new 23,000-square-foot county animal shelter in Santee. When completed in early 2026, it will provide a new standard of care in animal housing for long-term animals as they patiently wait for a new home. The new shelter in East County will also include an on-site small animal hospital, and it will serve as a fire evacuation site for animals during local disasters. 600,000 people live in the unincorporated area, and most of them have animals, Supervisor Joel Anderson said during the groundbreaking ceremony, adding that having a new shelter in Santee helps and enriches our neighborhood. Fawn Maurice from County Animal Services notes that since the county never euthanizes any animal, some pets stay in shelters for over a year. The new facility will provide much-needed space for these animals to live in comfort while awaiting their forever homes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego County Registrar of Voters. You don't have to wait until election day to vote in person. Voters can take advantage of early voting at over 200 vote centers open across the county starting Saturday, November 2nd from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Then on election day, Tuesday, November 5th, all vote centers will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Find a location near you at sdvote.com. Vote centers have replaced polling places and provide more services. You can vote in person or drop off a mail-in ballot. Vote using an accessible ballot marking device, receive assistance and voting materials in multiple languages, and register to vote or update your voter registration and vote on the same day. Voters can use a touchscreen to make their selections on ballot marking devices. When finished, the voter will print out the official ballot, review it, place it in a secrecy sleeve, and hand it to a poll worker to insert in the ballot box to be counted at the registrar's office. Remember that campaigning or electioneering within 100 feet of a vote center or official ballot drop box is not allowed. This includes visible display or audible dissemination of information that advocates for or against any candidate, measure, or proposition on the ballot. Additionally, an individual may not circulate any petitions, including those for initiatives, referenda, recall, or candidate nominations. Don't delay. With a significant number of contests on the ballot, the voting process may take longer than usual. It's a good idea to bring your sample ballot with you and have it pre-marked. The registrar's office recommends using early voting options to avoid long lines. The options are vote in person at any vote center around the county, or cast your ballot by mail, or drop off your ballot sealed inside its return envelope at an official drop box. To vote from home, sign and be sure to date your return envelope. Seal your completed ballot inside and return it by mail promptly to make sure it arrives at the registrar's office before November 5th. To drop off your ballot, seal it inside its return envelope and return to one of the registrar's 150 official ballot drop boxes. This secure standalone box features the registrar's logo along with the county seal and should be labeled Official Ballot Drop Box. You can get a list of these at sdvote.com. The sooner the registrar receives your ballot, the sooner it's processed for the first release of election night results. If you already returned your mail-in ballot, you can confirm when it was received by the registrar's office at sdvote.com. Learn more about voting in the November 5th presidential general election at sdvote.com or call 858-565-5800 or toll free at 800-696-0186. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.